Hey y'all, and welcome to Southern Fried Spooky, the podcast home of all things Southern Spooky, and this week, Cyan Azure Blue.
Nice.
I'm your Carolina girl, Heather.
And I'm going to point out that I'm colorblind Tony.
Bitter much? We'd like to invite you to our virtual office Christmas party and ask you for some 5-star reviews on your podcast platform of choice.
Wait, we're having an office party?
Just in our minds.
I was about to say, I'm not cooking for this one, am I?
No, but you can fix the Xerox machine when it breaks down.
Damn it. And people have been sitting on that thing.
I know, right?
Tiffany's been copying her butt.
Please find us on Facebook and leave us some comments. Find our Patreon and leave us some small tokens.
Oh, great. Now we're out of toner.
Today, we're sharing a couple of stories that are guaranteed to ensure that you'll have a blue Christmas. Huzzah for color-coordinated stories.
Why are the lights blinking?
So we'll start on the Carolina coast and the story of the blue lady.
I'm blue.
The legend of the Blue Lady was created in what is now Hilton Head Island.
We've been there.
We have. It's really fun. Mm-hmm. In 1880, the 87-foot Hilton Head Range Rear Light was completed on what was mostly an undeveloped island back in the day. At the time, there were two lighthouses near to one another, but the rear light was the tallest and the furthest from the ocean. As was traditional, the lighthouse property included a lighthouse keeper's building. Let me try that again. A light keeper's house? A place for the dude who worked there.
Yeah, yeah.
And some
employee lodging.
Yes. And some ancillary structures, like a storage building for the oil that
fueled
the lights. Oh, probably. The rear range light keeper, Mr. Adam Fripp, a familiar name for those of us locals.
Not me.
Fripp Island is one of the many islands that are out there. It's just a name that's around that people forget belonged to a person at one point.
Okay. I always wonder why it was called that.
After somebody, probably someone who is credited with discovering it. Those of us who live around here know that one of the coastal islands is called Fripp. And his ancestor, or at least there was a previous Fripp, named Captain Johann Fripp, who was a privateer. I assume they're related, because how many Fripps can there be?
I would say Johann, but that's just me.
Yeah, probably.
But he was a privateer, apparently.
Yes. Which is not... Anyone who's been to our Ren Faire knows, the pirate does the illegal thing, the privateer does it, but with a letter of permission from the king or queen.
Yes, yes.
So Mr. Fripp, not the privateer.
A privateer is a pirate with a license.
Yes, basically. his job was to climb to the top of the light with oil to fill the lamp.
Of course.
Like, very old-fashioned kind of thing.
Well, I mean, yeah.
In 1898, an enormous hurricane swept onto the coast.
Well, you're on the East Coast, there's going to be enormous hurricanes.
We do get a lot of them. Pushing a huge storm surge and powerful winds onto the rear light. It's so weird to say that. Range rear light. The hurricane was said to be one of the worst the island had ever seen, at least up to that point. Massive storm swells buried the sand dunes and washed the roots of the pines under gallons of seawater. And as the hurricane surged forward, Adam Fripp knew that no matter what, he had to continue with his job, the light burning.
Okay, so just a small aside. Yes. In 1898, there was only one hurricane that struck South Carolina.
Hurricane Georgia.
And apparently it was a Cat 4.
That's intense.
Yep.
Imagine being at the top of a lighthouse during one of those.
It was a Cat 4. When it made landfall, that puts it square in the middle of 130-mile-an-hour winds.
Again, a great time to be at the top of a tower.
Yeah.
That sounds terrifying.
Right?
How would you like to be 90 feet up at that point?
You know me. I'm pretty fearless when it comes to a lot of things. That ain't one of them.
Nature is not a thing to be tested. So with driving rain pouring in his face, he waded through water pushing through undertows that kept trying to pull him down as he went back and forth between the lighthouse and the oil house. Now, I don't know how much oil a lighthouse needs, but apparently it was enough that he had to go out a couple times.
Well, I mean, you know me, so it's one of those things of, oh, Tony's got this. My friend, there's a couple of things that I do have. I have a beautiful wife.
Aww.
A lovely house. A best friend who is a turtle. But this ain't one of them.
I have a few questions. Have I met the turtle?
He lives in the library.
Okay, I just didn't know that you were that close. At some point during the night, Mr. Fripp died while up on the light's deck. The common theory is that the fear, combined with the physical strain of toting oil through the storm, took its toll and he died of a heart attack.
Well, I mean, okay, so the way they used to carry these, imagine like Krampus carrying the gibbet.
Like the cage?
It's sort of like that, except it is a very thick, like almost bag that you would be carrying.
It would be smart, especially if it's a lighthouse, if they had a pulley system for heavy stuff.
You couldn't have a pulley on there because it's all fire-based up there. Most of the things on top of these were metal and cement. And the only way you could actually have a pulley is you had to have rope and a wooden, like, stirrup for it to sit in.
I suppose that makes sense. I'm sure he would have wanted one at the
time. Oh, yes, absolutely.
Now, apparently, his young daughter... Now, I don't know how young... His daughter Caroline is said to have kept up fueling the lantern until she, too, died in the tower during the storm.
Wait, so he was carrying oil, died during this process.
Yes.
Then his daughter decided she was going to take up the mantle and continue to do this during the same hurricane, and she died.
That's what the story says.
Wow.
When rescuers arrived, now, mind you, days later,
they
found the light was extinguished, but again,
of course, days later,
and both bodies were discovered. Fripp's eyes were closed and covered with pennies. It's assumed Caroline is the one who put the pennies over Fripp's eyes.
Yeah. And, well, I mean, this was a common thing in the 1800s. Oh,
yeah. And Caroline, she was discovered deceased only a few feet from her father. Her blue dress was tattered and torn from the winds of the hurricane as she climbed the tower to refuel the light in her father's absence. Now, some sources say that Caroline died of shock a few years after her father's death. Shock of what, I don't know. But others say she lived a long life, carrying out her father's wishes of being the lighthouse keeper and keeping the lamp lit to warn others.
So now this is all conjecture, really. It's just,
yeah, like, I think they
it's
know
all hearsay.
There was a Caroline Fripp, but they don't know, did she die when she was young? And we still don't know how young or, you know, much older.
And, like, I personally want an autopsy. Like, what happened to this girl? Like, if he was her young daughter, she didn't have a heart attack as well.
I mean, it could have been drowning or being hit by something. Because, you know, as they pointed out with hurricanes, I believe it was the great Ron White who said, it's not that the wind blows, it's what the wind blows.
Oh, yeah. They have done tests where a plastic straw was shot through a 3-inch thick board.
So, hurricanes are dangerous.
Yeah.
But again, we don't know if this actually killed her or something much later. During the construction of another famous lighthouse in a much sunnier, much less untamable era in the island's history, the old lighthouse keeper's cottage was moved into a new resort, aiming to transform the island into a tourist destination, which, spoiler alert, it very much is.
Yeah.
As the foundation was set and the first framework was erected for the Harbor Town Lighthouse, I've been there, workers would often notice an odd light coming from the old cottage. Some merely dismissed it as a strange blue blur on the edges of their vision, but some swore that they had seen a sad-looking young woman dressed in blue anxiously pacing the porch. Today, the range rear light stands on what is the 15th hole of a Hilton Head golf course. The lightkeeper's cottage was eventually moved over to Harbor Town.
Yeah.
Visitors and locals alike have reported seeing Caroline on the porch. And in time, as more and more people came to the island, the blue lady, see, she could be a small girl or a grown lady, we don't know, was seen around the site of the old Leamington Lighthouse, breathlessly making her way through the woods during storms. And the legend of the blue lady grew, with sightings rising whenever hurricane clouds rolled through the skies, and her blue dress gives her away.
I wonder if her and the gray man actually, like, talk occasionally.
Maybe they invite the Pink Lady from Asheville over sometimes.
Yeah, they're just like sitting there on their ethereal porch, like sipping like ghost mint juleps. Like, well, looks like there's a storm a brewing.
Well, they are the two hurricane ghosts, so I suppose that's true.
Yep.
Very colorful. Well, see, the gray man, you can see him without much trouble.
She would be the gray lady.
She would to you, but that's not her name.
Yes, she would be the blue lady. I wonder if her and the pink lady, like, get together and, like, exchange, like, dresses just to freak people out. Oh my god, the blue lady's wearing something pink! What does this mean?!
Next, we'll move along to Kentucky and take a gander at a particular family.
Oh.
The Fugates, commonly known as the Blue Fugates, or the Blue People of Kentucky.
Mm.
They're an ancestral family living in the hills of Kentucky, starting back in the 19th century.
So that's the 1800s people.
They're known for having a peculiar genetic trait, a blood disorder. I may get you to pronounce that one. Methemoglobinemia? Which causes their skin to appear blue.
Yep.
If you Google them, you can find photos, even in color. They are, in fact, actually blue.
Like Smurf blue.
They look a bit like Violet Beauregard.
Which is kind of funny because also silver nitrate can turn your skin blue.
Yeah, I saw a picture where there's a guy who did that sort of deliberately.
Yep.
Violet, you're turning violet, Violet. The story of the Fugate family begins with a French orphan named Martin Fugate. I honestly don't know how to say that with a French accent. In 1820, Fugate claimed a land grant in eastern Kentucky on the banks of Troublesome Creek.
Wow, the place is actually called Troublesome Creek?
Yep.
Oh, this creek. It ain't nothing but trouble. But Daddy, that's what we need to name it.
Well, the creek, which runs through Knott County, was so named because of its nearly impassable game trail.
Mm.
Even experienced hunters couldn't weave their way through the valley as large trees, creeping vines, and big misshapen stones were all over the pathways.
Misshapen stones.
I don't know who's to judge what a stone shape should be, but apparently they're awkward to climb over.
Well, I mean, what's really funny is that you actually have like a geologist come out and go, yep, that stone's misshapen. Alrighty, let's go.
This angle is off by 3 degrees. How dare it? Martin Fugate and Elizabeth Smith married around 1820. Now, unbeknownst to either of them, because I don't think any of this was known at the time.
But knowns to us.
Knowns to us. By some incalculable odds, because I don't do math, both were carriers of the recessive methemoglobinemia.
You can call it MET-H gene. Yes.
Consequently, 4 of their 7 children had blue skin. Continued reproduction within the limited local gene pool, which sounds an awful lot like incest, with a lack of transportation infrastructure, ensured that many descendants of the Fugates were born with MET-H.
Okay, so, long story short, don't sleep with your cousin.
Yeah, eventually you do get, well, like the Royal Habsburgs.
Yeah.
Did he say something?
Oh, he said that he wanted to go and get pudding.
And like Eddie Izzard's take on, when cousins marry, you eventually get the royal family who are like, so you're a plumber. What on earth is that? So in addition to being the subject of gossip, the Blue Fugates were also the target of superstition. Appalachia is a place of some isolation, as we have discussed, mm-hmm. where customs and traditions develop parallel to the modern world, but deviate in their capacity to be reasonable. I like that phrase.
Did you know that Appalachians actually refrained from the Civil War? They called it a rich man's war.
Kind of true, but it's always the poor people who fight it, right?
Yeah, they like most of the people, like the Appalachia, like cities and mountain folk, they were like, nope, not our war.
Many hill people believe that the blue skin of the Fugates was an act of the devil, or that they were somehow their own race. Some just thought they looked funny, which I guess is probably true, but for this reason, the Fugates and their blue descendants never really left their little hollers and continued to intermarry.
By the way, a holler smaller than a village.
I kind of thought it was like a little crevice, but so it's a town.
Yeah, it's smaller than a village. I think the it's like 20 to 30 is holler. I'd have to look it up again. It's like it holler is like in the woods, and it has to have a population of at least 20. This year, I mean,
it sounds like smaller than a cult.
Yeah.
Dennis Stacy, an amateur genealogist and descendant of the Fugates, states,
"Was he blue?
I don't know. Mm. It was hard to get out, so they intermarried. I'm kin to myself.
I'm my own grandpa."
The disorder can cause heart abnormalities and seizures if the amount of methemoglobin in the blood exceeds 20%.
Yes.
But at levels between 10 and 20, it can cause blue skin without other symptoms. Most of the Fugates lived long and healthy lives. The bluest of the blue Fugates, Luna Stacy, which is a beautiful name,
yeah,
had 13 children and lived to be age 84.
So apparently the heart problems were not in her.
No. Descendants with the gene continued to live near Troublesome Creek and Ball Creek into the 20th century. However, by the early 1960s, some members of the blue Fugates had begun to resent their cobalt-tinted skin. Not only did their skin mark them as different, which it certainly did, but at that time, people had already begun to associate their skin color with their family's penchant for inbreeding. They eventually came to the attention of the hematologist Madison Cawain III.
Okay.
Cawain, C-A-W-E-I-N, I think Cawain, was an accomplished doctor. He helped isolate the antidote for cholera and helped create a drug for Parkinson's.
I knew that his name sounded familiar.
Cool. But he was also a hematologist at heart.
He studied blood.
He said that blood cells always looked beautiful to me. So when he began hearing about the blue people, his interest was piqued. He and his nurse searched for them, long hours driving out in the middle of nowhere. But they could never find them, and they were about to give up when, to his astonishment, a pair of siblings sporting blue skin walked into his clinic. They were really embarrassed about being blue, Cawain remembers. Patrick was all hunched down in the hall, and Rachel was leaning against the wall. They wouldn't come into the waiting room. You could just tell how much it bothered them to be blue. With the assistance of the nurse Ruth Pendergrass, Cawain made a detailed study of their condition and ancestry. Based on a report published in the Journal of Clinical Investigation in 1960 by a public health physician named E.M. Scott, who had studied a familiar or similar phenomenon amongst Native Alaskans. This is a really long sentence. Who wrote this thing?
You did.
Cawain concluded that a deficiency of the enzyme diaphorase resulted in an oxygen deficiency in the red blood cells, causing the blood to appear brown, which in turn made the skin of those affected appear blue. I hope you followed all that. Cawain devised a cure for the disorder, more blue. Counterintuitively, the best chemical for activating the body's process of turning methemoglobin into hemoglobin is methylene blue dye. The Fugates he treated ingested this dye, and within a few minutes, the blue coloration of their skin disappeared, and their skin turned pink. A much more normal color for racially white individuals.
Indeed.
As long as they kept taking the pills of this substance regularly, the blue people of Kentucky could live their lives normally. His findings were published in the Archives of Internal Medicine in 1964.
Which, I'm fairly sure that I've already explained this to you. Any kind of medical journal is updated and outdated every 2 years.
That does not surprise me. Well, there's always new stuff.
Yeah.
And old stuff gets disproven or updated because they figured out better.
Yeah.
Benjamin Stacy, born in 1975, I am 1 year older than he is, was the last known descendant of the Fugates to have been born exhibiting the characteristic blue color. In fact, when Benji was born, the nurses and doctors were shocked and confused. He didn't come out crimson like most babies. He was dark blue. And the doctors were so worried that they called an ambulance to take him 116 miles from his hometown outside Hazard to the University of Kentucky Medical Center.
I've been to Hazard, Kentucky.
After 2 days of testing, the doctors were no closer to understanding why Benji's skin was blue. And then, after 2 days, y'all, Benji's grandmother spoke up asking, "Have you ever heard of the blue Fugates of Troublesome Creek?" At that point, Benji's father, Alva Stacy, explained to the doctors, "My grandmother Luna on my dad's side was a blue Fugate, It was real bad in her. Just happened to remember that they have family members who were blue.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We were blue. Damn, forgot that one.
Get this. Benji is descended from a line of this family that began when Martin... Remember Martin?
Yeah.
Martin's son, Zachariah, married his mother's sister.
So his aunt.
Yes.
He married his aunt.
Yes. A little strange, but okay. Within a couple of months of his birth, his skin color began to change to the average color for a baby. By the age of 7, he had lost nearly all of the blue coloring, indicated that he likely only received one copy of the gene from one parent. He exhibited only blue tinges on his lips and fingertips when he became cold or angry. In 2019, the novel, The Bookwoman of Troublesome Creek, by Kim Michelle Richardson, described a fictional version of the Fugate family during the Great Depression. So, there you have it. Another episode of time you could have spent more productively.
I'm telling you, they're probably being productive. They're just listening to our stupid voices while they're being productive.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Now yeah, you can't talk either.
It's spreading to me now.
Oh no. We hope you've enjoyed it.
Yeah, indeed.
Please feel free to comment on our Facebook page and check out our Patreon.
Yep.
We were thinking of taking a Christmas break, but now we're not.
Yeah.
Join us next time when we get up to more spooky shenanigans. I don't know if this is spooky, but it is kind of interesting and weird.
Yeah. Well, we have ghosts and Smurfs, so...
maybe they were kind of descendants of the Na'vi on Pandora.
Yeah, maybe.
In the meantime, I'm your Carolina girl, Heather. And I am not blue.
And I am your Florida man, Tony, and I couldn't tell if I was blue or not.
We are...
Southern Fried Spooky. And colorblind.
Until next week. Bye.
Colorblind.
Sorry. You will always be colorblind.
Yeah. This entire episode is me going, wait, what does that look like? Wait, what does that look like?
It's all shades of gray, dear.
At least 50 of them.
At least.
My inner goddess was about to explode.
Okay, stop.